1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
What, now, what do you teach at Tech?
I teach urban history in my field.
That's right. I do remember hearing about you because I introduced a history course into the curriculum. Mm-hmm. The core, the crash core. And I think that's now been balanced. I don't know, maybe it has, but when I came in, I decided that we needed to redo the curriculum again. And there were two things I wanted in there. I wanted an urban history course, and I wanted a urban design course. And with Sawicki, who is really a much more of a numbers guy, he really doesn't have an interest in those kinds of things. And so I think that's been lost. But your name was mentioned because someone who might very well throw it. The first time it went around, however, what's his name? George Staples.
Jim Crimmins.
Jim Crimmins took the course. I knew about you. In fact, I've not made the association just now about you, and I heard that you did a very fine job in the architecture program.
Oh, thanks. I was trying to organize political city planning people for a while, but Malcolm Little and I could never seem to get together at all. He was very poor organizer.
See, I thought at the time that that course ought to have three dimensions. One, it needed an understanding of history, mm-hmm. and from a historian, it needed someone from, what was it, three areas, someone from a urban architectural development, mm-hmm. and the third area was someone, there's a third, three dimensions to the history course, mm-hmm. but of the three, I thought an urban historian. The history was the most important thing. An historian, who views history.
I wanted to do it.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't talk to him, because certainly I just happened to know Tim because I was on the Urban Design Commission for a number of years. And so I just kind of turned to him, but actually, I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to
talk. I'm sorry we didn't do anything. Well, maybe sometime in the future for this.
I don't know. I really. My ties are beginning to fade, I'm afraid, with Ted. And I'm sorry, because he's gotten rid of all people with practice experience. Malcolm is gone, and John is gone.
I don't know much about you again.
He's a good guy. I'm only negative, only because his framework is different. I have a different understanding of what planning is all about. It's a highly debated issue, and I sit on the National Accreditation Board, and we debate that. I debate with the accreditation a great deal. What would you like to know?
I came across the 1968 speech of yours. I think it was in Cecil Alexander's files. He gave me access to his material, and you had said something like streets were terminated as they passed from black neighbors to white ones. A map of the land that will show how few continuous streets traverse the urban community. I was curious about that statement.
Well, that happened in West End when they built I-20. It happened to some extent, the whole East-West movement. Mm-hmm. The expressway, which is a major, is such a big facility, effectively created a barrier. Mm-hmm. It's like a wall in which you penetrate at the interchange. Otherwise, you can't cross it. Not like a very urban. Expressways are different to the regular streets.
Well,
the streets you can cross.
Yeah.
Expressways are more like a ancient wall, mm-hmm. through which you have portals. And so that they become much more effective barriers between communications in the city.
Were these correctly built with that in mind? Was it located in certain areas?
No. You mean were they actually laid
out?
I think that the answer was, I think it was probably partly so, partly, they had directions they had to go. And so once they had a general corridor, the question is specifically where they designed the road. I think when it got down to specific, they tended to put it through slum areas. Mm. And those slum areas were particularly occupied by blacks. So the final difference was that it effectively separated the black community from the white community. But I'm not sure that I could say that it was motivated by racial overtones.
Okay, I come across your planning material back in the 50s, which indicated that they were putting the access roads and sort of meandering the highway, particularly to serve as buffers and walls between white and black communities.
I've heard this argument made many times,
yes.
and I wasn't privy to the final design decisions that were done. That was primarily done by the city and by the state in concert. My guess would be, though, I think, and it would be only a guess, is that it was less that than the ability to wipe out some slums.
Yeah.
That's certainly true in Techwood Drive, because I remember that area very well. I went to junior high at O'Keefe, which was then a junior high, mm-hmm. and it became a high school later. And I remember that old Techwood and William Street corridor, which was very, very heavily slum area. Mm-hmm. And I remember in 1946 when they began to build, to clear out that area, and it was a slum clearance project. The fact that it was occupied by blacks was secondary, and it certainly was, it meant that it wasn't a lot of resistance. As well. But if it was black, there wouldn't be a lot of resistance. You just didn't have blacks were, whites weren't organized either. In fact, whites were less organized. People don't understand that the blacks had very articulate leadership in the slum community, where the poor areas where whites do not have articulate leadership, because any articulate white can rise, and the blacks at that time couldn't rise. So you kind of kept pretty good leadership within the slum areas of black communities. So if we went to a white area, there wouldn't be that great of a protest. They were renters, they were inarticulate, they were not organized the same way and so forth. Whereas you have in the black community, that was kind of limited. Nonetheless, it came down where, at least in the William Street area, that was a black area. I remember, and probably one of the few people that you'll talk to, probably a few people remember, but I remember when the Tepper homes were built, because I was in the fourth grade at the time, and my mother, pushing upwardly mobile person as she was, sent me to an enrichment program during my summer of my fourth year in school. It was at Drury Hills High. And it was called an experimental program. And what it was, she dropped me off every day, and they'd take us out to look at the city. I have a feeling that may have been the genesis of my interest in cities. But I remember, the only memory I had, in fact, was we went over to look at their tearing down the slums and put up public housing. And so this was in 1936, when they probably, and I remember them tearing down the slums and building the public housing. And there was a great amount of excitement about they're going to put these people in nice houses and so forth.
Because that was a White House.
Yes, that's right. Interesting enough, this is a diversion. This is known as the first public housing project in the country. Actually, that's not exactly correct, because there were two projects built at the same time. There was a university homes on the south, and called this first. And not the one I call that first.
I guess this one opened up actually first. I guess technically for the first opponent.
No, no. Yeah, it'd be interesting, but if look at the design and the materials, that was built on a concrete block. It was built out of brick.
The
white one.
Was built out of brick?
Yeah. And the Techwood Homes, the brick.
And the other one was cheaper.
It was concrete block.
So they did give the blacks less in some sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the densities are higher. You don't find a nice courtyard. This is a nice design.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you look at the good design of a university home, built at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So even then,
that was a diversion. But I cannot tell you, because I wasn't privy to their design.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is that I do know that they hit it for, it was that we were in a slum clearance mentality, and it was very easy to take rent-occupied poor housing. It was doing the city a favor to get rid of this bad housing. And it was. The slum housing they had then was not was much, much worse than the slum housing we know now. Well, slums are better than they used to be. And so they were non-salvageable. They were overcrowded. They were outside privies. There were no paved streets. And so it did us a favor to clear out the slums. The fact is they happened to be black too, overwhelmingly black.
But in a sense then, I guess, in terms of what you were saying before, that you do have a situation in Atlanta where you have very few continuous streets, very long streets, mostly Drive, for example, Parkway Drive would work. Were the names changed, or were they cut at certain points to block up white and black communities?
Well, that particular street and Boulevard and Monroe Drive, it's an interesting story because we changed names of streets. Are you aware of the fact that Boulevard changed names three times?
As it goes from white to black?
Went to white to black, and after white it became Jackson Street, and then went back into the Boulevard as it reemerged in Grant Park and back. But we had Monroe Drive over here. But I'm sure you're on a map where the streets were separated. Atlanta has always been segmented because of the railroad. You cross over the, and when I began to do the planning on MARTA, I wanted to make certain that we see MARTA, the thing is that even with the railroad, we were able to cross the grade all through the city. It was a barrier. And the barrier was increased because you had industrial development alongside the railroad. So then you had the railroad, industrial development, and then you had the community. Mm-hmm. So that the railroad became a barrier, and plus the land use that went around it, that kept people from communicating north, south, and east, west across it. But you could get across it. Mm-hmm. One of the first things I observed when I began to plan the MARTA system in 67 was I thought maybe it'd be a good time to reconnect the city. So I began to run down the system to find ways, because what was going to happen is that when they took up the track and put down MARTA, it had to be fenced. So it would for all time increase create a barrier,
right?
And you have these 5 minute headways on the trains. And so you had to. So what I wanted to do, I said, we have to build them across, building permanent underpasses and bridges. Well, that was a great time to reconnect the city in a real sense. So I went through in my study in 70, in 67, 68. Went through and identified streets that I thought ought to be reconnected. Mm. Then we had to fight on who's going to pay for that, all that, and that became a big book. They didn't mind doing that, it's just that it was who was responsible for paying for that extra cost of reconnecting. But it came down to where MARTA picked up a lot of that expense because they were creating the problem and the reconnection. But we were able to build the Arizona Street underpass as a good example, which never existed before. So I'm only slightly diverging, but the city has always been segmented, not just simply by Howard, but was segmented by the railroads.
But also by rivers, I think, in terms of how the highway was put in some cases.
Well,
just getting back to your statement that, the 68 statement, that streets were terminated, they passed from black neighbors to white ones.
That's right.
And very continuous. Very few continuous streets.
That's correct.
And that's basically seems to be a racial thing.
I want to make certain that I really feel that it was a racial thing. Because the statement I made is right, the word terminated. I'm sure you all have a map how exactly where that is. But whether or not it was a racial or whether or not it resulted in, whether motivation was racial or whether it had a racial effect, I think those are two different things. And I don't want to misstate that there was some kind of racism operating here. It may have resulted in segregation, but whether or not the motivation was racist, I suspect it was to some extent. My guess would be. But I don't think that was the prime motivation. I think the prime motivation was to get rid of the slums.
Yeah.
And to and the slums existed, and so they put it on the edges of the slums that resulted in segregation.
For the highways? Highways. On the edges, yeah.
What happened, it happened in West End.
Yeah.
It happened in the between Grant Park, along Memorial Drive, where I-20 passes through, and there was a pocket along Williams Street in Techwood, in front of O'Keefe, that pocket there. There was a long pocket of black housing that was simply wiped out. So that they took that area, but that was the worst housing. They were looking for a way to do slum clearance and to buy houses that were cheap and that type of thing.
So it was probably a slum clearance motivation, plus I guess a buffer mentality, I suppose, was at work also to some extent.
Well, I think the test would be if there had been a slum area and whites had lived in there, whether they would have been able to clear it. And I have to say that I suspect in that particular part of on Spring Street, Techwood Williams Street corridor, I suspect they would have taken that in here. I really think they would have taken it in here.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that the majority of housing slums were black, and so majority of people displaced were black.
Now, it wasn't only in terms of the highway thing. I think you're talking about your speech with Terminator that has from black neighbors to white ones. I think there must have been at some point just the end of the street stopped. Maybe no paving beyond that point or whatever.
The reason I'm saying only is because I'm trying to think of some examples of that. There we go. Here's a statement I made 20 years ago. What do I know?
I know. Well, it's sort of unfair. I guess just a plot.
No. I think I exactly what the context is. I'll tell you where I think I made that speech, and I think I've got a copy of the whole speech. There was a White House conference.
I think I've seen a copy of the whole speech actually.
Yeah, there was a White House conference on housing discrimination, and Cecil Alexander was the chairman. And they brought in some people from Washington, and I was the keynote speaker. And that was that came from that speech. I'm almost sure. I don't know if I can remember. See what happened. We live a long time. You don't move. How long have you been living in this city?
12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I guess in terms of the lack of it,
I will have to think about that. Are you reading into that statement the streets were terminated? This has nothing to do with highways.
Yeah, it was simply streets were terminated simply to keep white and black neighborhoods separated. Nothing to do with I-20 or anything else. Just terminated streets. In other words, instead of changing the name of the street, it was attached to black neighborhoods.
I think that's probably right. I really would like to find some examples of that before I nail down on it. I don't know what I had in mind. I really don't. But I know where I feel certain that I can find good examples of that.
Yeah. I'm sure it happened. I mean, you said it, and I think I've come across examples myself.
I think it happened too.
Yeah. In regards to more of the situation I was curious why it went west first. And was that an effort to satisfy the barn community and win support?
It went east-west. The first line opened up was the east line. They opened it up, yes, almost a year before, because they needed a test track. And that was the flattest, easiest way. They did not have to come finish the downtown connection. So they went, so they tested out their equipment along a fairly flat surface, which was...
So there was no race consideration in terms of an east-west rather than a north-south line?
No, the north-south was tunneled, and it was much, much more expensive and much slower. So they went to the easiest one, the one that where the line is on the surface or on an elevator, but it's really on the side. So that was the reason. I will say that we were moving ahead to build model, just like you see it, and all of a sudden, in order to finish up, and in 1959, we began a massive study on model on transportation planning in Atlanta. They collected all the data. For 10 years, they went and collected data and they messed around with data, and it was human embarrassment. And finally, the Federal Highway Administration said, look here, we're going to cut off your funds if you don't finish that study. So they brought in a consultant to really finish it off, get rid of it. We're not going to pay attention to it, but just get rid of it so that we can start anew. The data was already equal and it was being good. Anyhow, we're still using it, probably. We brought in Voorhees Associates to do the study. Voorhees said, look, they finished the study and so forth. And it came up at the right of going to the referendum. Now, maybe we shouldn't build an east-west circuit. They brought Voorhees in to finish off the study. And here we were in 68. We were about to go to a referendum, and Voorhees comes out with a study that shows we really don't need the east-west line. It can be a bus line, much cheaper.
Yeah.
We do need the north-south line because the line is long needed. Well, we could have killed them. I mean, everybody was about to kill Williams. And now that does affect the black community. The black community is very heavily on the east-west axis. And so even if the figures did say that it was a no need, And Voorhees was very honest about it. I suspect that I don't question their findings at all. Mm-hmm. Politically, it was impossible, and they would never have. So we went ahead and voted on a rail system east-west.
So you had to go to east-west.
So just the opposite. What I'm saying is just the opposite occurred.
Yeah.
It wasn't a anti-race thing, anti-black thing that made us open to the media. The line is certain where it's a pro-black.
Well,
to get the black vote, we had to appease. The same thing happened with the Perry, with the Proctor Creek line.
Mm-hmm.
At the last minute, they wanted to drop the Proctor Creek line because we couldn't afford the whole thing. And the black community said, no, we can't do that. So what we did, we didn't extend the first segments of the system except to 285 in the west. We picked up the mileage that it was going to go, which was going to go to the river, mm-hmm. and put it on the Fox Creek line, so we could build the Fox Creek line to appease. It was a meeting. I remember the meeting. It was black leadership in the MARTA offices.
Who was there?
Enid was there.
Jesse Hill?
I don't remember Jesse there. I don't remember all the people there, but I do remember that quickly forget the first black senator.
Oh,
became head of stadium authority. He was there.
By racial motivation, I don't mean just racism. I mean.
Race is a factor.
What's a factor? That's not really fucking.
Race is a factor in all decisions in Atlanta.
You think so? That's why I was talking about in terms of the highways, the modern, you know.
There are virtually no major decisions that are made in the city of Atlanta that do not have a racial factor built into it.
That's what I was saying.
None. Nothing.
In terms of the building of the physical city, race.
Everything has a racial component.
Okay. When you were commissioner of budget and planning under Jackson, do you remember any situations in which racial factors played a role at all in terms of planning for the city?
Oh yeah. How long you got? Racial factor was always it.
Well,
but the single most thing, the single overriding thing, was how we allocated
our budget resources, particularly capital resources. What we found is that all the park money was being spent on the north side of town. And so we reallocated that so that a lot of the money was spent in black areas. So in the white administration, the tendency was, the parks were kind of like that. People don't realize that the overwhelming majority of people who live in Atlanta live south of where we are now, 14th Street. Overwhelming. We're talking about 65%, 70% live south of here. Yet when you look to see where the parks are, or the picking up the garbage takes place, or the paved streets, or whatever, the monies that go into the south side, now we try to diminish that. So we did not, I had the opportunity many times, I was asked to do this many times, to find out how much money is going to each of the council districts by facility. I refused to do it because it was so obvious if I did it, we would balkanize the city that people would say we need to put things in my district because I have 15% less than he has. I was trying to avoid that. I tried to get the party set up on the basis of need and not on the basis of well, we don't get as much as somebody else. Because you can always argue on what constitutes we're not getting as much. You know, you can, the way you're a statistician, you know, you can find all sorts of ways of making that point in your favor. So, but it was clear we were not putting money on the south side. What, it so happened that
this just crossed the floor.
No. For all our capital resources, where pipes go, where streets resurfacing goes, where storm drainage systems go, how you allocate those money. I mean, we're talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars.
It's just amazing, even by that time, after Ivan Allen and himself had tried to do things for the black community, you still have this situation.
Well, no one had ever really. See, they've never had a. The city government was reorganized, and they created a fairly powerful office, which I occupied, where I had both planning and budgeting responsibilities. And I was able to compare, perfect planning had not been particularly had not flourished very much in the city administration. We've now reverted to that under Andy Young. But during that period that Andy was, I mean, that Andy was there, and that I was there to help formulate that, was able to push planning. The new charter required an annual comprehensive plan, city, annually. No other city of America has that. Mm-hmm. And it also was attached to the budget. See, Andy took that apart, buried planning under three layers of bureaucracy, put planning budget policy in his office, and then gave it back to finance. The last place in the world you want budget policies to be in finance. It's an accounting function, finance. See, no policy. But during those years, we had the wherewithal to begin to do planning and also to look at budget policy and to link the two. So the first time we were able to do some analysis. And what we found is that we were really under expending in of our resources in that area. The other thing, other factor that was existing, it's a very subtle thing, I'm not sure how much you really want to go into these things, but they were so fundamental to our decision making. That we had all these federal programs, that were devoted to, I'm thinking of the name, where you had a program to solve a single problem. Mm-hmm. You had a park problem, you had a park law which set up certain kinds of parks, you had a school, you had primary education, secondary. What's it? You had all these federal funds coming in to the city for these problems, and they set the criteria. that the money was to be spent to help poverty areas or to help people in aging areas or areas that the housing was deteriorated or whatever the criteria was, to help those areas. Mm-hmm. So what happened, we had all these federal funds going into these areas.
Into the black areas.
What happened was, we then withdrew all of our local money and put them into the good areas. We began to make a segment of the way we spend money.
So the federal money went into the black areas.
That's right, because that's what they were written for, and that's what they were directed for. And so we took our net money, so if a problem happened in Chastain Park, we took our local money and used that.
Now previously, I guess, well, at what point did the federal money start appearing?
In the 60s.
So under Mazzello, let's say? Under Allen?
Under Allen. Allen went out in 68.
But, okay, if the money, federal money was coming in under Allen, did Allen use that money for the black areas at all? Or did
the federal funds began going to black areas.
In
the 60s. In the Great Society programs, the federal money began in the 60s. So we automatically began to take our tax monies, local tax monies, and put them wherever we needed them, which was then where the federal money was going to be spent. And since the money was so great, far beyond anything we'd ever known for capital expenditures, we were able to satisfy all our needs in the black areas. What happened was, in the 80s, is that when that money started, the federal money began to be cut off, where the money stopped was in the black areas.
But that would be unusual in the black mayor to not rechannel the local money into some of the black areas.
Well, see, without planning, which we don't have any in the city anymore, it becomes a political decision, totally a political decision. We have no policies, planning policies that we need. One of our planning policies is actually to target certain neighborhoods. It was encouraged under the community development funds. Housing funds were going into an area. We took our park funds to an area so that we have enormous amount of funds focused on a single area. Mm-hmm. Even though the criteria may have been different and we had a lot of choices, we tended to decide to target the funding toward where the areas that we wanted to do something about.
Okay, so I guess the areas under Jackson probably were targeted more at least for the black areas, which had been affected to some of the years.
Well, that's correct. But you see, the reason I don't quickly embrace that idea is because I think we have to be very careful. We have a city which is 68% black, and to say so most of the city is black, isn't it?
That's true.
To say that we're going because they're black was not totally correct. It may end up that way, but we were going to places that we could show from the 1970 census at the time that were places that had high efficiencies in terms of housing quality and in terms of utility lines and so forth. And a lot of those areas, most of those areas were black.
Yes, but nobody worried.
The only whites that are left there. We have very few lower class white areas in the
world. Yeah, that's true.
We have East Atlanta, the Cabbage Town.
Right.
At that time, we had Loring Heights, which has now become middle class. And even the area near Georgia Tech,
right,
which was poor, but which has now gone up in influence. But we really have very few areas we could hold on, onward for our onward area, down below Confederate Avenue.
Plus, back in the 50s or 40s, when blacks represented a third of the city, they certainly weren't long getting a third of the funding. They're getting virtually nothing, really. So it is
No. There's no question that getting blacks, that a combination of the federal programs, funds, and getting blacks in city council, starting with Kitty Williams, has brought to our attention the need to put money into into the property areas, many of which will, most of which will bind.
So in other words, the type of decisions you were making as
I want to be very careful, though, not to make judgments, to apply, not feeling that these were racially motivated. They may have ended up as a racial context, but I have to be very careful not to overstate the degree of by which these things are motivated by race.
But race was a consideration.
Race is a consideration, and in fact, it came down where it had a great deal to do with the effects on black areas. But I don't, again, the whole question of whether or not we're aware of whether or not how it's a white song or not, is it simply because it's a song or because it's black? And I would contend that that particular case, it was because it was a song.
I guess one of the things I was thinking of, whether there was any change in policy with a black administration coming in regard to, let's say, saving the inner city neighborhoods, was citizen participation in planning decisions, was did a black administration bring any kind of new aspect to planning in an effort to sort of provide more voice for the black communities in the city?
It's hard to separate out why it is that we sort of, you know, why we do certain things, because there are a lot of factors playing up here. So there was no question that having blacks in the administration, having blacks in city council, and once we set up the NPU program, having blacks participating in city council, made us more aware of the needs in the black areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it would have, that if there were a white mayor at that time, he would have been somewhat less sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happened was that we had a lot of black administrators. You had eight commissioners who were black, for one. In fact, there was Commissioner of Public Works, regarding the streets, who was black, who employed half the city employees. That one department, and he's since broken it up, but that one employment in Maine had half the employment in the city, and was hit up by black. There's no question that there's a far more sensitivity to more openness. And I suspect more than if it had occurred if it was a white administration without white administrators under him. The federal monies, however, were extremely important because they were earmarked to how many I use all my courses. But when you have monies that are earmarked for a certain purpose, and in general funds, these are programmatic funds anyway.
But they were earmarked particularly for the poor areas.
That's correct. They were earmarked. Now, the fact is that in order to use those monies, you had to put them in poor areas.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with the black administration.
Okay.
That happened under Ivan Allen.
Okay.
It happened under myself.
Yeah.
And so we were forced, we wanted these monies, and we were the first ones in line. The first in line with public housing, first in line with urban oil money, first in line with the community development monies. We were always there. And they always went into where they were appropriate.
To my feeling, it's not so much that race as an issue was always prominent, but it was always sort of an underlying subtle issue or motivation. It was there,
mm-hmm.
but not always right on top. In terms of why public housing was put in certain places, it might have been the cost of the land, but I think it was also placed at times for racial buffer reasons.
public enemy.
Yeah, to serve as buffers in some cases.
I know that Ivan Allen put that terrible Bolton Homes that's been flooded and had all the rocks and made it dead out there one night and so forth. I had dug out the guy who headed the planning program, planning bureau when I was commissioner, Pyatt Gladden. Pyatt is the person I talked to. He was really Pyatt Gladden, G-L-A-D-I-N. He was director of planning. And the Hartsville, and I guess he went back to Hartsville. I'm not positive about this, but I know he was directed all on Ivan Allen and MSL. And he became, when we reorganized the government in 1974, and we put planning as a bureau rather than a department, created a new Bureau of Budget Policy and a new department, which I get it. He was still head of the Bureau of Planning. He pulled out a memo that he had written out of an hour. Strongly recommended against putting Molten Home up there because it was such an isolated place. And that people, it was subject to flooding and it was a bad location. Ivan Allen, I did these studies for Ivan Allen when he was mayor. In the early 60s, you had to prove the need for federal funds and the need for housing. So I did the studies that estimated the amount of public housing or subsidized housing, you know, public subsidized housing we needed in the city. Something like 70,000 units. We were needed right now. Well, he just took off like a big bird. All he had to do is tell him, he didn't care about planning, but all he had to do is just give him a figure, and he went off. And he started building public housing everywhere.
Now, why the Bolton Road? Why did he put it out?
Because the land was available.
Okay, so there's no. Yeah.
And Paya showed me a memo where he advised against that because there was no public transportation, it was lousy land, and so forth. But he was hell bent on building these 70,000 units.
He did it.
And we were in bad shape in the early 60s, and that's how we're going to solve the racial problem, or end it, or defuse, not solve it. By creating better housing.
Gladden still lives in the city?
Yes.
You were commissioner of budget planning throughout the Jackson administration?
No, first 2 years. My deputy came in for 1 year, David Ricker, a fellow, and then he's now head of a huge department in Washington, so the D.C. government. And then Richard Layton came in. But see, the problem was Richard Layton, Richard was really the commissioner for the second administration. He was 3 years. But Richard was a budget analyst, and not a planner. And so he didn't use planning as a basis for creative policy. To him, creative policy by getting some numbers together and weighing things and this is better than I'll say that about it. I create policy by talking about the future and how to get there and then begin to devise ways and then create policy. It's a different way of approaching things.
So,
but as a result, Richard didn't pay much attention to the planning bureau at all. And so it became a different instrument. But he was essentially the commissioner when doing the second administration. And I was commissioned doing 7478.
Okay. Just a few other things. I don't know if you ever read a book called Economic Growth and Neighborhood Discontent by a fellow named Stone. He studied city planning and city. But anyway.
He studied city planning in Atlanta?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, urban renewal is what the book is about.
How long has it been out?
Came out in the 70s.
I'm surprised I don't know what they were.
I'll just mention a couple of efficiency, but what do you think of that? He says, at the city's instigation, the north-south freeway was shifted from the proposed route west of the CBD, which would have elevated it over the Railroad Gulch area, to a route that looped around the eastern periphery of the CBD. And apparently, according to him, the east-west and north-south freeway served to displace a large number of low-income blacks. In other words, the road was shifted from the Railroad Gulch to the east side to eliminate the large black area. Mm-hmm. Did I do that letter at all?
No.
That predates your period.
Predates my period. I have to say that one would, I would assume, however, that the reason that it went in that particular location was that we had and I was involved in this particular decision, that we had three urban renewal projects. The first three projects in Atlanta. One was around Atlanta University, one was around the stadium, and the third one was around Bethlehem, which was our worst slum, but it was solid. I mean, you wouldn't believe. I mean, it was like a third world nation that was down there. And so that became really our first urban oil project. That land was available.
Okay, it was cheap.
It was not only cheap, but it was assembled. People had already been thrown out. There was no relocation. The Relocation Act didn't come in until 1970, way after this, which was in the 50s. And I was involved with my first job here. I took my first job here in 1956, November 56, I came in. And they were doing it with Phil Hammer, the Congress. And Phil had the contract to do the market analysis for that urban renewal land and the first urban renewal fund. Mm-hmm. And Robin and Company did planning on it, fiscal planning on the Bethel Pine project. Mm-hmm. It wasn't called Bethel Pine. It wasn't called Bethel Pine, but that was the area. And on the urban renewal, why you bought land, removed people, cleared the land, put in utilities, streets, and so forth, and then we sold it. My judgment was, had always been, that the reason why the highway went the way it did is because that's where the urban renewal project was, and the land was available. It was probably cheap too, but it was available.
So people had been cleared out already.
People already had by urban renewal.
So
under urban renewal, there was not the strong requirement. They did do some relocation. The highway had no interest in relocating people. Mm-hmm. I did some studies for Wyndham Island Allen that came out with a devastating figure that in the 10-year period between 55 and 65, we dislocated through primarily the urban renewal and highways, but also through some public housing. But finally, we just said there's 67,000 people. 67,000 people. I've used that figure in speech at the speech. It's an incredible figure. A lot of people went back to the southern mountains. They did not, there was no relocation law at the time. Mm-hmm. In the 70s. There was an effort in urban renewal, not highways, but urban renewal, mm-hmm. to help people find new housing. But by in 70, there was money set up for relocation. And there was a requirement that you had to you displaced residents, this killed urban renewal as much as any single thing. In order to dislocate, you can get a final standard house at affordable rent,
which is good for the dealership.
Which was impossible. And that was an enormous cost. Mm-hmm. And we weren't building housing to that degree. And that was a major factor in the killing of urban renewal.
But the highway came through basically when the area had already been cleared.
As I recall, the highway was in the plans before clearance was made, but the land was already asked for, and so that's the reason, as far as I can tell, and it was the urban renewal project that cleared those people out of the east side more than the highways. The highways still were put down land, but. You know, what caused what, you know, which came first, but I'm not positive, but my guess would be that it was the urban renewal plan that Robin got. I mean, you can talk to the guy who did the planning, who's still around, he's now retired from Robin Company, Andre Steiner, did the planning on that. He probably could tell you. He wanted to build a lake. You know, great ideas. I told him, he was a dreamer. He had always crazy notions. He's known for this. Crazy notions of these
extravagant things that he wanted to do in Lana. And I have to say that after 30 years of planning, I look back on them and say, God, those were imaginative ideas. We really lacked the imagination of our understanding. One of them was he wanted to build a lake between the two ridges that one on Boulevard where Grady is. And then we had the Great Peachtree, and we had the Great Valley. So the most bottom was what it's called. He wanted to make a great lake and then put housing on the sides, so like a European city. And we put a highway in it.
I guess nobody ever thought of building housing for the poor in that area. I mean, kicking these people out, nobody ever thought of allowing them to move back into decent, low-cost housing.
There was some plans for that. Now, for instance, Ivan Allen cleared out in the Somerville project, which where the stadium is now. Ivan Allen had designated that for public housing, the stadium property. And so he was going to build a white project.
Oh, a white project. Oh.
And the blacks walked in and said, you ain't going to build a white project there. It's about a white project. He says, you want to do anything about a black project, but you don't go build a white project there. And they just read him the riot act. Well, the downtown business community didn't want another black project on the edge of the central business district. So there he was with his dilemma. He had his land cleared, ready to go. And that's when the idea of the stadium was began to form.
Okay, so initially where the stadium is then.
So was that a public house?
He wanted to do a white project.
That's right.
I said no. So he put a stadium. Obviously, if he wanted to
do... The best community wanted more black housing, public housing.
If you're thinking of a white project or a stadium, then that was actually supposed to serve as a buffer, or at least to clear the blacks out of the central business district area.
Absolutely.
I mean, so the stadium was put there as a buffer then.
Well, he couldn't think what to do with it, so
wanted a buffer there, let's put it like that.
Yeah.
He wanted something.
I assume so, yeah. He wanted housing. What do you need is housing.
Yeah, sure.
He felt that there was a need for housing. I'd come up with this 17,000 figure, and he was desperate looking for housing sites. And so he designated that for a housing site,
for a white one.
And that's right. And the black said, no, it ought to be for black. Well, and the business community didn't want black housing there. So he came up with this idea of the stadium, and I did the economic feasibility study for the stadium, and determined whether or not it was feasible, because that's not how it was presented to me. He said, we're going to build a stadium, we're going to do a feasibility study, so you need to come up with a feasibility study that shows that we need a stadium.
Oh, so.
That's how things are done.
But, then Urban Renewal, therefore, was, at least to a certain extent, black removal. They wanted to get the blacks out of the surrounding area. Clear the slums, of course, but
they wanted to, it amounted to that, and maybe you could characterize it that way. It was an effort to try to, see, there was no competition for the downtown area in those days. Buckhead was nothing, and there was nothing for Perimeter. So we needed more room for the downtown to grow. And the perception was we had this urban rural area, we can clear out the slums and let the downtown grow, expand. And so it was an effort to allow the downtown to expand. The fact is that it did remove slums.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it was a black removal, it has a connotation that may or may not be, it's probably not an untruth, but it characterizes it a little differently than I would characterize it.
But certainly they wanted the blacks to be shifted off to a different part of the city.
Yeah, well, what happened was, I've made speeches on this subject, I did at the time, is that we didn't have relocation funds.
Mm.
So what the tendency was for blacks to, people displaced, blacks and whites, to go to the next neighborhood. And so what happened is you suddenly, in the Inman Park area, in that area, in Grand Park, you suddenly doubled and tripled and quadrupled the population. And so the landlords came along and they took a one-family house and they made it a four-family house.
Mm-hmm.
And the apartments became divided up. And there were more cars in the streets, and there were more kids in the schools, and so forth. So we were making temporary places to say to them, we created this one. We just sort of pushed them back.
Yeah.
Now, I can't say that the highway, I'm not sure, in my own mind,
whether the highway preceded the urban renewal or whatever,
yeah.
All I get, or whether or not the urban renewal was carved to accommodate the highway, I don't recall that.
It just seems it would have been a lot easier to put it over the railroad gulch area, which was uninhabited, rather than to throw it through.
Well, how would you deal with the railroad, though? You had all the railroad tracks coming in. You would have had to elevate the whole thing enormously.
Yeah. How about the Civic Center? Was that also any kind of buffer? Was that put in as a way to keep black out of an area, so serve as a racial buffer in some sense?
No.
Not the same way as they didn't.
No. We had all this open land. There was no market for the open land.
Except the housing.
We cleared it for public housing.
Right.
You could have put public housing back in there. Remember, Atlanta had more, still may have, more public housing than the city of America.
Mm-hmm.
10% of all housing is black. It's public housing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than that now, we expanded the housing. But we had something like 50,000 units for the 500,000 population.
I would guess, though, if you had a Maynard Jackson as mayor at that time, or Andy, you would have had housing back in that area right in the civic center, perhaps. I mean, this was really a businessman's decision, rather than somebody who's
concerned. How about Andy Young?
Well, I would say you probably definitely have housing back in that area.
Andy Young is a businessman's decision. His whole attitude is that we need economic growth, and we need jobs, and we need businesses.
Do you think you'd have a civic center in that area?
I think Andy Young's attitudes are diametrically different from Maynard Jackson's attitudes. Andy Young is very pro. He runs highways through neighborhoods. He doesn't care if we destroy things.
That's true.
So to put it on a racial basis, I don't think it would be exactly right, because Andy would be different.
Mm-hmm.
I really think Andy's decision would be different. The business community walked into Andy and said, look, we need this plan for businesses. Andy wouldn't give a minute to public housing on the plan.
And I'll try to get in touch with Jackson to speak to him, but he doesn't want to really be interviewed and talk to him about it for some reason. He doesn't speak to anybody at all about his administration.
Hmm.
I don't know why. Okay, I guess it's the last thing. I don't know if you would know anything about this, but apparently Sam Masella was telling me that he had come up with a two-city plan at one point. Southside was to become one city and Northside another. And do you remember that at all?
Seems
like sort of an incredible idea, really.
Isn't that interesting? I've got just vague memories of that. I wasn't really active in the sales campaign. I was much more active with Ivan Allen, because I did plans and studies. But Michelle, whom I've known as from kid, childhood, I had no relationship at all with Sam.
Hmm.
So I missed that whole thing. He had all these bizarre ideas.
In terms of why the South Side was not developed, is there any racial aspect to that? Why we have all the development going to the North Side, all the money going to the North Side?
You talking about outside the city, or are you talking about Buckhead?
Well, Buckhead and outside. Well, even today they're talking about bringing the Singapore group in to develop the South Side, and apparently the South Side has not been developed in the city. Was that because blacks were there and the whites went north?
I think that was a very strong consideration. But you also remember that there was an income difference that translates largely into black-white, but it was primary. You can't put a shopping center in a poor area. I'd be much more concerned not about the new development, but the withdrawal of the businesses, where you saw the chains begin to close all of their chain operations in the poor area. The stores were small and inefficient. That was the problem they had in Little Five Points. What do you do?
Club.
That's right.
I know Little Five Points.
There was I'm trying not to get too far adrift on this thing. But there is a process that takes place, a
there is what I've termed as a commercial lag. As a neighborhood goes through transition, the population becomes poor, and their buying power becomes poor. So in the neighborhoods, the commercial little neighborhood centers are relying on less and less buying power. The businesses are owned by whites. So let's assume the blacks are moving in, and you have these white business people. Well, they're very immobile. Unlike chain operations, individual things, but they really are clutching until, and almost desperately to that location, till the quality of merchandise goes down, the ability of people to buy in cash goes down, they jack their prices up so they're accused of cost the price them out in order just to, because of the bad checks, and because of debts, and because of a lot of things, so maybe because they're screwing public. But whatever, finally they leave. The process of recovery and occurs in much the same way. In other words, the commercial lags behind the withdrawal of the middle class and white community for several years. What happens is when you begin to re-inhabit through gentrification and so forth, little fire points and so forth, is that the whites move in and they've got a devastated commercial area. Mm-hmm. And it takes years and years and years to begin to lure back the entrepreneurs. The chain operations won't come back because it's small and efficient and because they have financial policies that show that this is not where they are becoming. And their data is out of date. They don't know that the incomes are beginning to come back. So there is So one of the things I did when I was at the city, I had policy overview on the urban, on the community development money. I devised what was known as the neighborhood commercial revitalization program. Mm-hmm. And I selected two areas for demonstrations, one with 5 points and one Capitol Heights area in South Side, one black and white. Mm-hmm. And I said what we need to do is to try to help a new generation of entrepreneurs to come back into this area. And so we set up a loan program and a commercial fiscal program to revitalize. We sponsored a study for the rebuilding of the apartments and so forth to begin to rebuild and to bring commercial back into this type of thing.
Well,
why am I telling you all that?
It worked in the little 5 points, didn't it? Did it work on the south side thing? No. Didn't come back in?
The neighborhood itself picked up and ran with the ball there. The neighborhood did not generate, even though you had good incomes coming back in. Actually, the people coming back into Capitol Heights were blacks, replacing the poor whites. And yet, it just didn't pick up.
There's certainly enough wealthy black areas in the South Side. You never really saw the boom in commercial development on the North Side.
Not about the South Side, but on the West Side.
Well, on the Southwest. Yeah.
In the West Side.
Right.
You had to have, look at the way things work is that if you're gonna have public money, you can either just give the public money away, or the public can take the extra step of creating plans and helping people and letting people participate in those plans, hopefully, and then set up a concept of what you want to achieve. If you don't have planners in city government and a decision-making decision, the money is given out in a different way. A project comes in here, a project comes in there. There is no policy, there is no direction, there is no vision, there is no nothing. We don't have planners. Andy has diminished planning. He's very planning on the three layers of people.
I didn't realize he had changed the
policy. He totally changed the whole. He pulled the park planning and budgeting, and he put planning in community development, head up by Erin Terpel, who was head of the Vista, CEDA program. I mean, here's planning under Erin Terpel, buried so far from City Hall there in 10 Front Street.
Barry, so far from Andy, Andy is opposed to planning. He has made many statements that it stands in the way of progress. It delays things. He doesn't like horse participation.
Interesting. For somebody who came up the way he did.
It is.
Well, he's, to me, the parallel between Reagan is incredible. Absolutely. But the idea, his whole idea, the notion of what government is all about is, and how we ought to free the private sector, and we got to get jobs, and let's go around the world and see that. There's a wonderful article that occurred by Rick Allen last week, right after the election, a comment on Andy Young's mandate was right before the election. It says, Andy, there's no mandate, there's no competition. The chair of that mandate is a misreading. He says, Andy's not the mayor. Koch is a mayor. When you think of Koch, you think of the mayor. When you think of Andy, you think of him as emissary.
Well, he has a very hands-off approach, that's for sure.
We changed the government in 74 to have a strong mayor government.
Yeah.
We took the power out of the city council, put it in the office of the mayor. In order to have a strong mayor government, you got to have a strong mayor. You can't have a strong mayor when the mayor's out of town 50% of the time.
Yeah.
When he has no understanding, no vision of the future, no understanding, no policy planning, surrounded by people interfering in government. I mean, what the hell? Yeah, well, we don't have a...
He's been lucky so far. It sounds nothing really going wrong.
So I just want to disassociate the notion that because the person's black,
mm-hmm.
all blacks are going to have the same kind of interests toward helping the black community and have the same motivation and that type of thing. There is a world of difference between Maynard Jackson, who was anti-business,
mm-hmm.
but who really went out to change the priorities of this community, and Andy Young. And they're both black, and to say, because they're both black, they have the same way of operating, same motivation of what they're doing, and the same version, same ability to accomplish them.
Well, yeah, I know they don't have the same abilities, but I would think initially that they would have had the same
sensitivities
to the community, right. I don't think it's a certain extent it is.
I don't think that, I think that's just, when you run a highway to a white community, we run a highway to a black community, there is a highway we kill, the highway going to the black community. There was a highway 670.
Yeah. You were going through.
Here comes I-20 from the east, coming downtown, it jumps down, and comes down into the stadium.
Right.
Okay. We had developed a plan to continue I-20. No. We had a plan to bring a new road on down to tie into the Lakewood Expressway.
Mm-hmm.
And it went through the Lakewood area, but it hit a black community where David Scott happened to live, the senator. That highway would have taken very few houses, would have relieved the downtown interchange to the stadium, and would have provided a very good road. Nowhere near the turmoil. It would have displaced some people.
Mm-hmm.
That road has been dropped.
What? Was Scott lived there because it was a black area?
Well, Scott fought it. I don't think it's because it was a black area.
This is under Jackson.
This was under Andy Young.
Oh, this is under Young. So in other words, Young was willing to drop highly to a black community, but he has fought tooth and nail not to drop it to the white. So in other words, there is more sensitivity to the black community, don't
there? Yeah, there's reverse discrimination, too.
Well, yeah.
Let's call it by a different name.
And that highway first was thought of, what, in the
70s? It was under, it was a toll road kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm off. Let's see, let me just show you. There were trying to find all of the brilliant. Here we go.
Here.
Oh, this was the east side. This is not the This, what a road was proposed to come down through here. Here's I-20.
I-22.
And then from I-20 on over, to pick up the... Lakewood Freeway, actually, this is a slight error, because Lakewood Freeway actually comes over a little and dead ends right here.
This would be called Lakewood Tollway.
This was known as, well, for a while, the whole notion of financing roads from tolls, the whole notion was determined where they was later dropped, and they dropped the whole notion of tollway authority. But at the time, we were experimenting with it, this was going to be a toll over here.
So in other words, so this was dropped, this Lakewood connection was dropped because it went to a black community.
That's right, right here.
Yeah. What year was this?
I can't think of the name of the community.
So this was planned initially then under Jackson. He was what?
Well, this preceded Jackson came in 74.
Oh. That's right. So this is,
I was still a power consultant.
This is thought of during the Mitchell administration.
Well, that's right. But it didn't really come to surface. It really didn't come to a decision-making point of whether we're going to build it or not for Lane and Young.
And he said no.
And he said no.
That's interesting. Considering all that's going on with the residential properties.
Yeah. Well, that was a different animal. That's strictly a client relationship between him and Carter.
Of course, you really wonder if the President Schmuck was going for a black area, whether he'd be so strongly in favor of it.
I think he'd be hard-pressed.
Yeah.
He would really be close. That's a very interesting observation. If that had been a black area, of course, it does, it's already been cleared out. And it does hit east, it does hit Fort Ward area, which is black. But the clearances are, it'd be no more terms. Because you have to live with it after it's there, but it's right. Certainly would be no clear. If it were had to be cleared, and if it went to a black area, it'd be interesting to see how strong his allegiance to Carter would be at that point.
Or if it's really just a nuisance to your ears, that's interesting. Well, look, thanks very much.
Okay. Oh.